Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Something very interesting we're going to be going over today. It's going to touch some sensitive ears, I'm sure. In the studio with me, Ben Starr. Julian Joiello is not here today because he's in Europe, as any wise youth would be, traveling around for the summer. Linda Vanella, a specialist in dealing with trauma, especially with children, but more recently turning her attention to the trauma that results in our topic, which we're going to be getting to. Ori Amini Morrison, who is also with us, who helps people deal with both relationships and trauma. So we've got quite a team. But what are we looking at today? Well, it all kind of happened at once. We talked about trauma and how trauma affects children. And then we started looking at how it affects adults in relationships. And then on top of that, we get a very good piece of news that two people that we know were getting married. And so here this thing is happening. Who's getting married, Linda?
Lewis and Kara will be getting married this Saturday, August 23rd.
In New Canaan, Connecticut. Yes. So here these two beautiful young folk are going to get together and hope they can make it work. And they're great people with great friends. But here's the thing. You have to deal with so much stuff. How does trauma, Linda, relate to this issue, which we're going to be talking about today, which is two? Why do men marry their mothers symbolically? How does that affect their relationship with other women and men? And why do women marry their fathers? And how does the relationship between them and their father affect their relationship with all men afterwards? Very interesting subject. Let's talk about the traumatic part of it first, Linda, would you please?
Yes, Armand. We're speaking about trauma-induced intimacy disorder, which very accurately is a term that we apply to that problem or that significant disconnect between a man and being able to have a relationship of significance, or a woman who's able to have a relationship of significance when they enter adulthood because of the trauma of the attachment to their parents at an earlier time.
Trauma-induced?
Intimacy disorder.
Intimacy disorder. Let's stop there for a moment. That's quite a big word, but it really makes so much sense. How is it that so many men have such difficulty in their relationships with women, and how many women have such difficulties in their relationship with men? Very interesting thing. Let's get some global statistics. Tell me about Italy versus the Northern Hemisphere.
Go ahead. Yes, it was a rather interesting statistic. When we look at culturally, we see a significance of this trauma very prevalent all around the world. So it isn't just us. However, one of the statistics that I found quite interesting was that in Italy, we find that the problem reported among females for the breakdown of their marriage was 36% of them said that it was the problem of the mother of the father of
their husband's mother.
Yes, married to the mother, and that she was too significantly involved. 36%, as compared to Germany and France, which was Germany was 25% and France was, I believe, 12%. And so that's the only.
So the French don't let mama get in the way of their love.
Yeah.
Right? But the Italians tend to have it happen. Yes. What about in Israel? Let me ask Ora. Yes. Ora, is mom part of the.
Very much so. Mom, Jewish moms and Israeli moms are very involved. There's another breed of
the son's attachment to the mother.
Very strong.
It's so strong that he could actually risk his marriage.
Yes. Yes. When he gets married, his family of origin is still his primary focus.
Wow, your first faith. What somebody once taught me a long time ago, you have to learn your priorities. Your first priority is to your mate. That's your highest, at the top of the pyramid. Your second priority is to your children. Second, you never prefer your children over your mate. Your third priority is your parents. You never choose your parents over your children. You never choose your parents over your mate. Your fourth priority are your friends, and in that order. And what would happen is very often you would find that women would be choosing their sons as opposed to their loyalty to their mates. And this is where this comes from. This is where this idea of women, of men being married to their mothers come from.
Yes, and it happens all too often, very subtly, and certainly that there's no, there's no cause or deficiency, but that in times of early childhood, where the needs of the child, perhaps at age two, when a child would be able to go through a normal development of no, things have occurred at that time where the boundaries become very confused. And so the needs of the mom and the needs of the child become therefore confused, and can happen in a variety of ways.
Give me an example. What ways?
Well, for instance, if the mother is ill, or if the father has left the family, or if he's the only and the oldest child, there are circumstances right there that would want that little boy to become the head of the household. Mom's illness perhaps keeps her from being totally sufficient and at playing her role, or her own emotional needs, where she's not able to attune to the needs of the child and perhaps has really become less conscious and less aware of her need to be able to address the child and be able to let him grow up.
What about on the other side? What about on the mother's need? Now, for example, if a woman is married to a man who they have difficulty with, for one reason or another, maybe because she had difficulty with her own father, and she has a distant relationship, she could triangulate and have her son be her confidant, right? And in fact, I've seen cases where women, adult women, refer to their sons as their men, as opposed to their wives, the husband's wives' men. You know, and it took quite a bit of training for them to get out of the habit of saying that and doing that. Very difficult. What happens is you have this relationship with your son, and then he chooses a mate. And the mothers feel like, you know, almost insulted. Well, this person better be good. And they even try to teach the husband's wife how to raise their own children. She becomes the grandmother who knows more than everybody else. But what it's saying is she's married to her son. And this son's wife is ancillary, not meaningful, doesn't really count. And if mom had her way, she could wait till they break up, and then she could just get the grandchildren and her son back. Now, that sounds pretty vicious, cold, and callous. But unconsciously, it happens a great deal, and a lot of people who are going to be calling in today will give us examples of where they kind of suffered under the hands of this. So, Linda, what you said, there are a number of conditions under which that foster this loyalty of a boy to his mother, as opposing to his being able to select a mate.
Well, yes, and like I mentioned, the fact of illness, if mom is ill or if daddy has left the home, and if she is perhaps a bit isolated, there are certain circumstances other than the fact that she might also have some boundary issues of her own. We're going to leave that alone. But even culturally, the isolation of her, if she doesn't have other woman friends or peers or people of significance in her life, where she's home alone, she's tired, and so that little boy becomes more of a companion, a confidant, as you say, which oftentimes will go across that boundary, and that little boy, instead of exploring his own needs, becomes that mommy's little boy. And so that attachment becomes very distorted. So when he should be out in the street seeking other boys, she might be calling him in, sharing with him things of her everyday life that she perhaps doesn't have a woman friend or a husband or another companion that would be more appropriate. So therefore, there's a number of pieces as to what does and oftentimes is contributing to this situation. And I think it's a simple fact that when people are unaware, they're not conscious of these kinds of things, how it can so easily occur that way. And the way that you describe as a grandmother is also another indication of a woman's role, that sometimes she loses sight of needing other woman friends to use as companions in her life.
At some point, when we say women married to their fathers, men married to their moms symbolically, it almost sounds that there's a sexual reference which would make most people feel repulsive. But on the other hand, almost every man I ever interview, who I feel is somehow affected by his loyalty to his mother, keeping him away from other women, has had experience of things like this. "Rub my feet," mother would say to her son. And her son would be rubbing her feet. And mom would say, "Only you could rub my feet and make me feel good." What this does to a young boy's brain, the connection, the physical connection, yes, it may not be sexual, but in a way it is. Little girl hugging her daddy, the only hug that matters. It may not be sexual, but it is physical. And it does encourage that kind of difficulty in later life when you try to hug somebody else.
Well, I think what we're speaking about, Armand, is very accurately boundaries. It's boundaries. And so sometimes those boundaries become very confused, so that even a simple touch of rubbing your feet or scratching your back, of course, they're all part and parcel to our sexual intimacy. So that's why we're calling it trauma-induced intimacy, because it does interfere with those sexual kinds of feelings that we would have into an adult life of significance partnership.
And we're talking about men who tend to have a loyalty towards their mothers that keeps them in some way separated from being able to form a relationship with a different woman or a man. Ben.
I think it's a great topic, Armand. And there are terms that we use colloquially, such as a mama's boy.
Mama's boy is a terrible thing, right?
It has a negative connotation. It sort of implies a man who's either timid or effeminate or not outgoing at all. On the other side of that, we have the daddy's girl, which doesn't have that negative connotation. In fact, I think a lot of women would even self-identify as a daddy's girl.
I'm a daddy's little girl, right?
Exactly. I mean, I just think that shows an interesting sort of dichotomy, and I'm wondering what you think of that.
Well, I think you got a good point there, because we're going to have to look at women in a minute and what their relationship is like with their fathers. But in this thing of women, of men and their mothers, now what if a man feels engulfed by his mother? You know, as many mothers will do to you, they'll get on your case and they'll stay on your case. And he rejects his mother, and therefore he rejects her, and he rejects all women because he becomes afraid of being possessed. Now we could say, but he's not married to his mother, but the truth is,
yes, Armand, that's very typically, that's the most outstanding part, when a man is unable or unwilling to connect. That's the first indicator when he won't commit. Right away, we would want to explore his relationship with his mom, because there's almost a contempt. The fear is very deep and unwilling. So again, it's another significant indicator of a boundary, where the fear of that enmeshment keeps him paralyzed, and he's unwilling and he's unable, and oftentimes unconsciously not able to really connect with another person.
So love in an unencumbered way would be, okay, enmesh me. Go ahead, I'll enmesh you. You know, let's enmesh each other. Nothing wrong with that. What's scary about that?
The only frightening part of that is of course, enmeshment is only a word, but it's the boundaries. It's the part of enmeshment that we neglect to address the needs of the other. So with these kinds of trauma induced, when you look at the mother-son, it is looked upon as the mother's inability or lack of desire or unconscious way of not attuning to his needs, but rather looking to address her own needs.
Her own needs through a son, Aura.
Yeah, I'd like to add that another phenomenon is when the mother actually takes very good care of the boy, that the relationship is not focused on her needs, but on his needs. And he's the center of her world. So she cooks for him, and she prepares, and she asks him how he is, and she listens to him endlessly. She's very focused on what he needs and his growth. And then that's what he wants when he gets married. He wants that kind of motherly care to continue. And he cannot understand, how come you can't be like my mother? My mother was so good to me.
Well, when I was a kid, my dog was terrific. My dog loved me no matter what mood I was in. My dog was fantastic. I had a great dog. He was wonderful. And when I was young, somebody said, what are you looking for in a woman, in a girlfriend? I said, I want a girlfriend who could love me the way my dog did. So we have the same kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I wanted my husband to be like my brothers and my sisters. You know, just unconditional love, but I can do whatever the fuck I want, you know? And just, sorry, I...
Okay. You can do anything that you want. Linda, in this world where that confusion takes place, it's easy to see why. Let me give you an example of one of the popular songs from the 1900s. Ben?
Want a girl just like the girl that married dear old dad. She was a pearl and the only girl that daddy ever had. A good old-fashioned girl with heart so true. One who loved nobody else but you. I want a girl just like the girl that married dear old dad. When I was a boy, my mother often said to me, get married, boy, and see how happy you will be. Ho, ho, ho. I have looked all over, but no girlie can I find who seems to be just like the little girl I have in mind. I will have to look around until the right one I have found. I want a girl just like the girl that married dear old dad. She was a pearl and the only girl that daddy ever had. A good old-fashioned girl with heart so true. One who loved nobody else but you. I want a girl just like the girl that
Hey, Ben, when was that song written?
I believe that's from 1911.
1911, Barbershop Quartets was singing outrageously that, you know, I want a girl just like Mama. And it's okay to think so. There was nothing wrong with that. Then comes psychoanalysis.
Then comes Freud.
Then comes Freud. Well, let's talk about Freud and his perception. Freud said the following. He said, if a woman is at the beginning... A boy child is going to be taken close to his, he's going to be, of course, he needs his mother, and he connects to his mother. His mother's breast and he are the same thing. We're one item. Sometime later in life, he notices there's a guy around, and ideally he connects with dad. And then he moves from being connected to mom to being connected to dad, and he stays there in his identity. Women, on the other hand, are different. At first, they're connected to mom, and then they get connected to dad. for a while, and then they're supposed to go back and connect with mom. Something sometimes happens in that exchange between dad and mom. Something goes on.
Well, yes, Armand, I think a lot goes on, because when she makes that switch from mom to dad, that's a very, very traumatic time and event in life in her childhood that will either be well addressed and be able to be dealt with in a healthy way by her mom as well as her dad, so that she could make that transfer and then either return or not return to dad in a later time when she can make a significant sexual intimate relationship. But yes, many of, as you're describing it, I'm sure we can all envision that. The boy child, when he's nursing on mom, he then has that masculine feeling of wanting to take care of mommy. That is really found in every little boy. I want to take care of mommy.
Really?
Yes. Yes, being a mother of three sons, along with being professional, I can tell you it's very obvious. And as I think that a little girl will want to take care of daddy, but I think with a little boy, that protective, that little boy part comes out at a very early time. And so
sorry to interrupt you, but maybe it's because in a way every boy wants to grow up to be the big guy. And he's competing with daddy. Daddy takes care of mommy, so I'm going to be just as good. I'm going to take care of mommy, and this way I could become a grown-up. So it's one of the ways that guys identify themselves as becoming a grown-up. It's one of the ways through. So it may not just be the pathology of it. It could be this is a natural identification. But, of course, he could get stuck in that place.
For sure, and it has a lot to do with the relationship of that little boy with the father. So where is daddy, and is daddy taking care of mommy, and is what's the message in the family going on? So right away we start seeing that the events in that family will highly impact upon that little boy and his relationship with mommy. Does he need to protect her? Does he need to be her confidant? Is she happy with daddy? Is daddy protecting her? So there's many, many things going on right then and there that will register with that little boy, and then of course we come up with his later ability or not to be able to connect with a significant sexual partner.
This is Armand DeMille with you with a bunch of people here in the studio. We're looking at something that is touchy, very touchy. A book recently that was brought to our attention: when a man is married to mom, when he's married to mom, and it's a book that has become popular with women who can't understand why their husbands are alienated from them, and yet they have a close relationship with the woman's mother-in-law, which happens to be he and his mom. And in fact, he and his mom conspire. They talk about her. A terrible feeling. You must run into that a lot, Linda, because you have three sons, right? You have three sons, and they have women.
Yes.
They all have wives. And those wives, you know, it could be easy for you to be talking to your son about his wife when he's complaining about his wife. And I've heard you just avoid that. You don't go anywhere near that.
I think that's a very important boundary. And I think that that has to be very clearly established. And oftentimes it's difficult to do that because, you know, you have, as Ora mentioned, you know, you're taking care of your son. You're taking care of him all of your life. And now you have to almost rely upon or allow for another person to take that role. And she may be very different. Her caring for him may, in fact, and often is, very, very different. And so it's really none of my business anymore. My role of being his mother has to have a boundary, and a very clear boundary. So whatever occurs in that relationship is really none of my business. And for me to be a listener, it really requires respect and an integrity of being able to say, okay, this is not something I need to be involved in. I need to respect their boundaries. They're together now, and that's his partner.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing, because when you think about it as a therapist who's helping people heal this, very often the woman counseling another woman will talk about the bad characteristics of the man, right? And the therapist, of course, bad therapist, I say this is the worst of therapy, is where somebody will badmouth somebody they don't know. But they'll give diagnosis about the other personality. They'll bring that up and they'll bring it. But it's repeating exactly the trauma from childhood. Therapists do it all the time. They don't even know the mate. And there are a lot of mates who are angry at the therapist because they don't get a chance. They don't even get a chance to really be known in any way. So it repeats that same childhood trauma, which is that that we're going to talk about and alienate and separate. This is Armand DeMille. We have a telephone number here, by the way. We're going to be covering next. In our next program, we're going to be covering the in our next program after the break. We're going to be covering women who are married to their fathers. And we're going to talk about that a great deal more. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. 957-2729. Ori, you had something further to say about that?
I just want to mention that Harville Hendricks was talking about how common it is for people to be attracted to the positive and the negative qualities of their parents, one of their parents or both, and that his postulation or his belief is that we do it in order to heal, to repeat some aspect of childhood and then to heal or to do it better.
So after the break, we'll be taking our calls. By the way, if you're calling it down, we're not going to take the calls yet. The lines are lit. People do want to speak to us, but we'll get back to you after about 5 minutes from now. But Ora, you know, Harville Hendricks, who's a psychologist who's written about this a great deal, he does have an interesting point. You may have chosen somebody who is like your father, like your mother, or the opposite thereof, which shows the same dependency. But according to Harville Hendricks, you do it so that you could improve, because when you were a kid, you were powerless in dealing with these issues. You were owned by your mother, you were owned by your father, you were powerless. Now you get a chance to become less powerless, and each time you go through it, you can say, I keep marrying the same kind of man. No. Each time you handle it better. And if a person's been married four times, on the fourth time you're just about getting it, it may take a fifth time. But it's not because you're choosing the wrong person. Ideally, you're choosing exactly the right person so you can get over the powerlessness of that early childhood. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite a unique perception, because the other perception used to be what Freud called repetition compulsion.
Right.
And according to repetition compulsion, what it meant was you're repeating the same damage in a way of staying connected to the very original trauma. It's your way of staying married to dad.
Yeah, and it's
very, very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Linda.
Yes, I see that very often and very obvious in many of the situations where I've counseled women, where, for instance, she will marry and say, you know, I can't believe I was looking for someone who was not like my dad, but I see that he is. And in sort of that Hendricks and Freudian approach, should I repeat it or should I stay with it? What often happens is she'll come in and she'll say, but I'm not going to do what my mother did. I'm going to do it differently. So therefore, you start beginning to see this boundary thing, a need to repeat it, a need to feel power, a need to change it, but also a relatedness to mother. So you start seeing a lot of other dynamics in these relationships. So, yes.
And then Linda, I think what the interesting thing about, I run men's groups and you run women's group, the women being able to communicate with each other about issues like this automatically begin the healing.
By all means, Armand. And we always have these kinds of things come up in a group. And you'll have a group of eight women. One woman will say to them, oh, my God, it happened to you. That's where I am. That's exactly the feeling. So we begin to see these kinds of patterns that are very, very, all too often, very commonplace, not in the rare family, but in very much everyday family of relationships.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to play you a familiar piece of music. See if you could listen to it. It's going to be Marilyn Monroe from The Prince and the Showgirl. But right now we're going to take a short break and then we'll come back with our song. Yeah. No, it wasn't that word. Fub, she said. Fub. Fub. F-U-B, yes. Okay. Wait, who mentioned it? Okay. Now, if you listen to it, she said, and the guy says, you know what, the fub, is a, it's a substitute for the word. Okay.
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine fin and haddie, I just adore, he's asking for more. My heart belongs to daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy, so I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy, ta 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 ta. So I want to warn you, laddie, though I know you're perfectly swell, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy, and my daddy treats it so well. Tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy. If I invite a boy some night to cook up some hot enchilada, though Spanish rice is all very nice, my heart belongs to daddy. Yes, my to daddy, so I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy, da 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 da. So I want to warn you, laddie, though I know that you're perfectly swell, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy. He treats it so well.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. A piece on CNN talks about the phenomenon of women who are drawn to husbands like their fathers. They were given a number of marriages, both successful and unsuccessful, in which similarities between a woman's husband and her father range from those as commonplace of a shared love of politics to unsettling things like physical resemblance or abusive temperaments. So there's a question. There's a question. What is this power of the relationship between the father and his daughter? I've often said that there is a relationship between father and daughter that goes so much deeper than any relationship of son to mother. I don't know why, but something happens in that relationship that becomes very intense. It's very, what do you think, Linda?
I think it's a very significant relationship of attachment. And once again, a lot has to do with what's going on with the girl child with the mother. But oftentimes the father, the man, will be looked upon with great pride, with great love, with great excitement. For instance, a little girl will oftentimes hear, when daddy comes home, we'll go someplace. And daddy seems to be the one with the power. And so oftentimes when that attachment, when she becomes significant to daddy, it becomes an attachment of deep connection and significance. It's not so much of the obedience or the nurturing that oftentimes she's getting from mom, but perhaps a place of learning, of significance. He takes pride in her, and he makes her feel like a lady, like a big girl, a woman. And so she becomes very moved by this relationship and oftentimes gets very much, again, attached in a way that could damage her, and it could affect her. So while being daddy's little girl, as a little girl, could give her a nice posture of strength and courage, but as she gets as she gets older and finds herself having difficulty with relationships, either she's comparing men to him, or she's angry and she can't really seem to have her boundaries of being able to deal with conflict. So again, it's those issues of boundaries that she decides, you know, she has difficult, and it comes out in, again, her inability to stay connected in a working, healthy relationship.
Well, the difficulty with that, as I hear it, Linda, is that one of the things I was reading about is very often a woman will have characteristics that are negative characteristics about her dad that she will not perceive, because she has this kind of romance, and I don't mean romantic in a sexual way, but it's kind of a romance. I love my daddy loves me. Now, this doesn't mean triangulation. She doesn't have to have a hateful mother. But it is, daddy is loving me and being nice to me. So what she sees is the beautiful part of daddy, is he's being kind, he's popular, he looks nice. But they don't see that he was also an alcoholic, that he was also somebody who lost his jobs, and the other things, they would actually not even see them. However, later in life, she will be attracted to people with the negative qualities, not knowing that what she's thinking she's finding, she says, well, that's not like my father, but it's exactly like her father. We got to work these through, each of us. Each of us, as we become adults, have to work through the things from our childhood that worked for us and some of those things that were toxic. Not that there was any poor intention on anybody's part. Listen, we've got a caller on the line. Joseph, thank you for waiting. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for waiting.
Okay, no problem. Couple of things. A little about me. I'm 53 years old, and my mother had me when she was 38. And I have six older siblings. I'm the youngest, but five of them are girls. And my father basically wasn't in my life. And I've never been married. I don't have any kids, and I had, you know, some nice relationships. One question is, how do we, I guess, recognize our blind spots? And also another question is, when you meet a young lady whose father hasn't been in her life, what is there going on? I find women are more receptive to fathers coming back in their lives as opposed to men. Yeah, so
it's a very interesting question.
Father hasn't been in their life, one thing, and then I also feel that men question fathers who automatically appear a little bit harder than
women do. Very interesting. Very interesting. On one hand, a father who has not been in a woman's life very often is always present as a phantom, as a fantasy. She has an imaginary dad. And she keeps that in her mind, and she searches for him, looking for him in other men, especially unavailable men. Whereas a man, very often, toughens up. You don't want me, I don't want you. And so he would be much more rejecting of a father who wants to come back, because he's angry. See, Dad left me. I'm angry. For the girl, Dad left me because I'm not worthwhile. Quite a difference, I think.
So how do you... Is there a way of recognizing that going on in a woman? You know, is it do you have to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist to recognize that this woman is still kind of like wishing for a dad figure as opposed to someone to just be with?
Well, let's say you did notice it and you did know it. And let's say she knew it. And let's say you were two psychiatrists marrying each other. Right? And you knew it about each other. It doesn't necessarily have to change anything. You could still keep that kind of commitment with each other, knowing that this is going on underneath.
Yes, Joseph, it's Linda here. Let me just add to that. I think, as what Armand just said, I'd like to reiterate that these are situations where it can all benefit our life just to become more aware of them. Because each and every one of us has been raised in families where we've had relationships with mothers and dads and who has left and who has stayed. So we've all experienced these kinds of issues. I don't like to call them trauma, but significant parts of our relationships. And I think it doesn't make it impossible to have healthy adult relationships. However, I think becoming conscious and aware of them, as we're discussing right here and now, can only help benefit us and really broaden our ability and our potential to be able to have successful relationships.
Okay, and earlier you were talking about men forming attachments to their moms and looking for women similar to their moms. I think my situation, what do you say to someone, like I said, basically, you know, my sisters range from 10 years older than me to 20 years older than me, and then my mother, and I'm the youngest. So what could possibly be going on in my head?
Yeah, you tell me. What do you think is going on in your head?
I don't subscribe to saying I was seeking someone that was that reminded me of my siblings.
Well,
my
what
mom.
Do you demand of a mate? What do you need of a mate that you can't seem to find?
Just compatibility. You know,
okay, compatibility around what?
You know, compatibility.
Someone you could talk to. Someone you could trust.
Right.
How about the trust factor? How big is that?
Trust is not usually a problem with me.
Okay, so what do you find is the biggest problem in relationships that you've had?
I guess this deep compatibility.
And where are you not compatible?
Conversation-wise, I guess. More conversation, more, I can't quite put my hand on it.
And were you able to talk to your mother? Did you have conversation ability with your mom?
Yeah.
Okay, so like you would like to have a gal, just like the gal that married dear old dad, you would like to have somebody with whom you could have the same level of conversation as you did with your mom.
Deeper, actually.
Actually deeper than that as well. But you see, it's still in that same place. Because it was somewhere in that exchange between you and mom that you felt special and safe. What did you have? You had your mom you could talk to. And that's all you're asking for.
Okay, okay.
So it's in that area. So it would be an interesting thing for you to be with somebody who spoke a completely different language. You know what I mean? Who didn't speak English one bit and didn't try, so that you and she could eventually not even talk and you could find what other kind of relationship you could have.
I see. Okay.
An interesting challenge, don't you think, Joseph?
Yeah, it's a very interesting challenge.
Yeah. Because, you know, the love stuff goes beyond the words. Goes beyond the words to somewhere deeper underneath that. That has to do with a different kind of connection. I thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. It's kind of amazing. A father is the first man a girl gets to know on intimate terms. He's bigger and stronger than mommy, and in many families he wields the most power. He's around less often, and the little girl learns only early on to understand her father's absence as evidence of his eminence in the outside world. He's not around because he's such a big man. If he's so important out there, he must be words-pleasing here at home. Many daughters idealize their fathers because they don't know them well enough to see their weaknesses, their vulnerabilities, and their flaws. The father's fallibility remains elusive, and his daughter, perceiving his strengths but not his frailties, desires his approval. Unconsciously, he seeks to duplicate the relationship with a partner. That's a quote by Barry Flint, who wrote one of the articles, Did You Marry Your Dad? On the line with us is Carol. Hi there, Carol. This is Armand.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
Good.
Good. 2 points, Armand, about the topic today. My grandnephew is 7 years old, and his mom and dad don't live together. And from the time he stopped sleeping in his crib, he has been sleeping with his mom. So just last week, he's a very sensitive child. And just last week, we were teasing him and saying that, you know, you're 7 now, you need to get your own bed. He says, no, he never wants his own bed. As old as he gets, he's going to always want to sleep with his mom. So we said, even when you're married, he said, yes. Even when I'm married, I'll tell my family that there's a day that I'm going to go to my mom, and I'm going to... Yes, he says, even when he's married, he wants to sleep with his mom, and his family will have to understand that. The second point, Armand, about girls marrying their fathers or being involved with men who remind them of their fathers. The relationship I am now in, it's as if I chose my father. I never had a good relationship with him. And it's as if I really chose my father and my partner. And I hear myself saying to myself nowadays, we're having some issues, and I hear myself saying, okay, I'm not going to be like, it's like, so just to what you're saying, as if you choose a partner to work out certain things, I hear myself saying to myself, no, I'm not going to be like my mother. The things that she accepted from my father, I'm not going to accept it from you. I don't say this to my partner, but I find myself saying this to myself. It's as if I'm working out the issues I had with my partner, with my father in this current relationship.
And you understand, Carol, that from his perspective, he doesn't know he's serving this purpose. He doesn't know. Your husband doesn't know that he's going to have to.
He doesn't.
He doesn't know that he's being the fix for your father. He doesn't know what's going on.
No.
So it's as well, there's some appreciation you should show him for knowing that you're loading him with a little extra.
Yes.
You know, so both are good. Now let's talk.
And I wonder, Armand, did he choose his mother in me?
Yeah, well, that same thing goes all the way back. And then did his mother choose her father in her, his grandfather? You know, it goes on and on and
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's a cycle.
Of course it does. But let's talk to one issue about sleeping with mom.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, we know of many children who up to the age of 5, 6 years old are still in their mother's beds.
Yes.
And when that person comes to therapy, we encourage that mother to finally let that child out of the bed. I know of children who get in bed between mommy and daddy.
Right.
And they sleep right in that bed.
Yes.
Well, clearly something's going on between mommy and daddy, and the child is the tool in the middle. But
yes,
just as likely they could have a big dog who sleeps in the bed, keeping
okay
them apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something to be addressed. It's not such a horrible thing. In certain cultures, I am sure it's acceptable for a man to say, I want to spend one night sleeping in a bed with my mother or my father. I'm sure it's okay on some level, but I think you're right. It's usually a sign of some need that's not being met that goes all the way back.
Yes. Yeah.
Let me speak of that, Carol. Once again, as Armand said, culturally, we can see how it plays out in many, many different cultures. We have seen through the ages where, and even now we have this open bed. So there are theorists that come up with child rearing that continuously question whether children should be in their own crib, or they should be in a bassinet, or they should be close to mother and dad at the early childhood stage. And then, of course, this controversy and there's discussion as to whether and what time the child should be sleeping separate. So that continues to be in a sort of somewhat vague place culturally.
And I'm from a culture where it's totally normal and acceptable.
Exactly. And I certainly don't question that.
Yes.
It's, however, now that we're living in this culture and this society, it's again questionable as to the appropriateness at age two. When we look at the child development stage, when the child at two begins to say no, it's a very significant place, and it's at that time where the child, I believe, should need some kind of ability to communicate and to be able to kind of design their own need. And if mom, dad, culture doesn't really allow for that, the child will also be all too often become a very overambitious child or a very shy and complacent child. So that, I think, is a time of boundaries that will affect that child and therefore the relationship with the mother and the father.
And I also come up from a culture where we definitely socialize our boys differently from our girls, you know?
Carol, thank you very much for calling in.
Yes, thank you, Armand.
Sure, nice to speak with you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Our telephone number, 212-957-2729. We have just about time for one more question, but it's really quite confusing. Let's take this last call. 212-957-2729. This will be our last call we'll take because we have to get off the air soon because they need their time. Linda, thank you very much. Aura, thank you very much for being with us.
You're most welcome. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Hold on one second. Let's see. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Yes. I have a perspective that might interest you about the parent-child dynamic.
Tell me about it.
Okay, well, I'm transgendered, and I realized just recently that I got in relationships both with my mother and my father.
Hmm.
Many, many years ago, I was married. You know, it's one of my youthful follies, you know, on a far distant planet. And I married a very passionate, but very often angry woman, which is what my mother is. And, you know, that was part of the reason why we ended up divorced. And of course, she was insanely jealous of my mother. And then when I started my gender transition, about a year after I started taking hormones, I was living as a woman, I got involved with a man. And, you know, part of it was that he was younger, he was good looking. But I also realized I was taken in by his charm. He's charming in almost exactly the same way my father is.
Hmm.
And
Maria,
it
certainly sounds complex. But you know, one point we want to be able to talk about transgendering and how that relates to this, because it really seems to be one of the more direct confusions that could easily, you know, somehow you have to look at and you have your own way of rectifying it. So I appreciate your contribution to this discussion. I just don't have the time to really go into this, which I think would require a lot of depth. But I appreciate your listening and your comments. Thank you very much for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We do have to be going soon. But as we do, give me a little of that Coltrane, would you? Too fast. We want to spend a special mention out to Elizabeth for her birthday today, which is happening today, one of our great friends, and to, again, to Louis and Kara, who are going to be united this August 23rd, Saturday, out there in Connecticut. Special thanks to you guys. I wish you luck. You know, obviously you're dealing with a great deal of stuff as we see it. Best to you all.